Martin, my friend. Welcome back to the show. How you doing?
Yes, I'm good. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Let's do the quick podcast thing where people who aren't familiar with who you are get familiar with who you are quickly before we dive into some topics. So who is Martin McDonald?
Wow, what a question. I did a podcast recently on a more sort of personal type podcast, and I was introduced as a philosopher, and I was like, wow, that's the first time. And I was like beaming with smiling, and I said, thanks so much. It's the first time. She said, and she was interviewing me with her husband, and he was like, I want to be called a philosopher. He's
like, a thought leader.
Like, that's such a cool thing. And that's partly because of my own podcast, not another nutrition podcast that you're aware of, because I do some, I call them wisdom episodes, because I do like philosophy. I do think it holds a lot of value in the world. And some of my deeper critical thinking, I guess, through nutrition, my background has led me there. But yeah, my background, for anyone who doesn't know me, I was a lowly performance nutritionist. I love social media. I love education. I was a university lecturer for many years, and just kind of started working more and more with individual clients, then had my own consultancy, which, because of my love for teaching, I guess I was more interested in educating clients as opposed to coaching them, maybe. But then I wanted to educate other coaches and nutritionists. And I guess some of the success I had, I love business as well. So some of the success I had around that, I wanted to just teach. And so in 2016, as you know, Mac Nutrition Uni was, came about. And I said this recently at one of my seminars, my aggressive dieting seminar, which I know we're going to discuss. I do an intro slide because I said, just in case you don't know who I am, because I was introduced, I spoke at the British Society of Lifestyle Medicine conference, and it's a room full of doctors and academics and whoever. And someone said, oh yeah, this is Martin McDonald. You know, he's really funny on Instagram. And I was like, that was my intro. And I was like,
he's a philosopher and he's hysterical on social media. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to get any buy-in or respect. The person before me was Professor Tony Goldson, and his introduction was obviously fantastic. But, you know, people, I want people to, and then some people simply know me as, you know, the creator or founder of Mac Nutrition Uni, this, you know, the world's best nutrition qualification. But, you know, I do have this background as a practitioner, and lots of what Mac Nutrition Uni has become is off the back of our very successful consultancy working with, and it's quite a nice qualification in that we do go into lots of areas of working with people. We cut out all the bumps that you maybe get at university, which people don't really care about, the sociology of food, the food policy, the how to create sausages, all that kind of stuff. And just how to work with people, but whether that's people in the corporate setting, sports nutrition setting, body composition, health. So that's kind of me to today. And then I guess, yeah, as a public speaker, I just love talking to audiences publicly, and that's why I'm doing my kind of tour of seminars at the minute as well.
Let's talk about that, because I want to hear a little bit about, give me like the when, the where, the what about the aggressive dieting seminar, and then I'm a bit selfishly more interested about how that became a topic that you're so passionate about, and then I'll dive into some questions about kind of just nuts and bolts on your philosophy on rapid fat loss. But what, when, where is the seminar, and how did this become a topic that you're so passionate about that you're going to talk about it quite a bit?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question, how it came about. My next seminar is in Las Vegas, so coming over to the US on the 10th of August. And that's a full day seminar. Well, 10 till 4. I stupidly thought I did the first few. I did one in Sydney and Perth and Singapore, London. And I stupidly thought I'd be able to deliver it in 3 hours. And it was ridiculous. I started at 6 p.m. because I was doing another talk on the Saturday, and we were talking like into the night. It was ridiculous. So it's now a full 10 till 4 seminar with after party or drinks, whatever, where we all carry on talking about everything. But so Las Vegas on the 10th of August. And the seminar, the reason I came to talk about this subject, actually back in 2015, I did a talk where I'm talking to a very, what I deemed knowledgeable group. And back then, you could wow people by saying, you know what, breakfast potentially isn't the most important meal of the day. Fat doesn't make you fat. Carbohydrates aren't the devil. You know, people are like, no way. And so it was the first time I wasn't going to wow anyone with such simple stuff. But something that I had seen time and time again was that individuals struggling to get results with their clients. And what I saw was, is that they were scared to drop their calories down. Because, for instance, maybe they didn't understand underreporting in the way that they should have. They didn't. They believed that people were eating 1,000 calories a day and couldn't lose weight. They believed maybe in these the boogeyman of metabolic damage. All of these different things. So I essentially went in and spoke to them about the evidence behind lower calorie intakes. And it, you know, that sounds very simplistic, but essentially the huge amount of evidence we have around protein sparing, modified fast, very low energy diets, total meal replacement type protocols. I think then as I spoke about it more, talked to more people about it, and people started using it and they had all these epiphanies, I then thought, do you know what? People need to be taught about the evidence. I've read all of the research. They need to find out about the fact that, oh, hold on, my client's losing more weight than ever, eating less than ever, and has no hunger. I mean, that's the thing that people, whenever I post about on my social media a couple of times this month about people have been to the seminars and someone said, you know, Martin, I didn't want to question you and I did believe you, but when my client came back to me and said his hunger had completely gone, and I've been talking about this, I call it this 3 to 5 day utopia. And it is where you start to get all of the real benefits and just effortless, you know, weight loss. And it sounds so quacky. I, you know, you hear all these gurus and people selling you rubbish on the internet, the HCG diet, all this rubbish, saying effortless weight loss. And we know that's rubbish. But, you know, it's completely evidence-based and it's what all the research shows us. And he said, I cannot believe it. I'm taken aback that his food noise has gone. He's comfortably sticking to the calories that I've given him. And, you know, it's a bit like, I've added in slides around GLP-1 agonists and how sometimes people, these, maybe we'll call them weight loss resistant individuals. They're not actually metabolically deranged. They are people who struggle with weight loss and it's highly, highly likely to do with the energy balance equation. And you get, they say, you know, I'm eating 1200 calories a day or however many calories a day, and I can't lose weight. There's something wrong with me. My metabolism's broken. And then they're prescribed this drug, which we know first and foremost reduces hunger and reduces essentially subconscious calorie intake. And so they then say, then they start effortlessly losing weight and they say, oh my goodness, my metabolism's fixed, because they don't understand how the drug works. They think it's like some kind of fat burner. They think it's a metabolic booster. But all it is they're able to stick to the same food diary that they were submitting to you, but they're actually eating that many calories and their weight just falls off. So this is essentially what you're getting from the aggressive dieting protocol that I'm talking about, and I've created this calculator for. And so this is what's really wowing people is the hunger side of things. You know, you say, what do people think happens when you aggressive diet? And they say, well, slows your metabolism. And, you know, I show them all the evidence about that versus moderate protocols. Well, they'll regain the weight quicker, show them all the evidence around that. Again, I do think there's some massive limitations within the research, which is why you get some of the negative effects in the research, which you don't get if you apply a much more performance nutrition-based model. In the research, you have to control for confounded variables. You can't just throw the kitchen sink at someone. I mean, you can if you are a bad researcher trying to sell a personalized nutrition product, which I'd be happy to talk about, the new Zoe study where they essentially did that. They used their biotechnology, but they also helped them in 10 other ways to help them lose weight. And they said, oh, look, our product works. But then they did all these other things, nutritional counseling, etc. But so in the research, you have to just go, we're going to do this. We're not going to change their exercise. We're not going to give them any other supplements. We're not going to do X, Y, Z. We just want to understand the effects of, you know, for instance, this calorie intake. And so, yeah, you can improve a lot on the research, which I believe is what I've done with the calculator and the information I deliver in the seminar, and particularly how to coach it or how to coach yourself. There's a lot of stuff that's people just say to me, well, can I just eat nothing? And will it do the same thing? And I'm like, try it. It definitely won't, because everyone's done that on every other diet that's ever existed. Your Herbalife, your Cambridge diet, your, what was it? Beyonce's maple syrup diet or something back in the early 2000s. But anyway, yeah. So to answer your question, that's kind of where it began, and that's where it's sort of continuing on from. And yeah, people are sort of very interested, obviously.
I want to talk about how aggressive we're talking here, just for the listener to put some context to this. And
yeah,
maybe let's start with that. And then I'd like to throw a couple of, like you said, what you might hear in response to somebody recommending a more aggressive approach. I believe there to be at least like two buckets of physiological considerations that people might have an issue with, and then maybe more on the psychological adherence practical side of things. But how, when we're talking about aggressive dieting, how aggressive are we talking in relation to what might be some of the more standard recommendations in terms of size of calorie deficit? So when somebody goes to your aggressive dieting calculator and they put in numbers, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, it's such a good question, because we don't have good definitions in the research to, or anywhere, a textbook to really talk about this. And I will say that my version of aggressive dieting, as I've kind of alluded to, the research, you might see studies of many weeks and months on 390 calories, 400 calories, whatever, 500 calories. And I believe that's where you get some of the major issues that we see with regards to for the obvious one, my calculator. The whole point of it is, and the updated version, the most recent one, has lots of like abilities to change things based on your preferences. So I could not believe the number of vegans who have come to my seminars, you know, considering I've, you know, made jokes about vegans, but they're all just the vegans who are cool and they can take a joke. But I even have a setting where it's like, look, I'm a vegan, and aggressive dieting, being able to hit what we might deem as even a moderate protein intake, is quite hard when you're limited on calories. I'm not saying it's hard for a vegan to hit protein, but when you're saying sub 1,000 calories, it does become hard. So my calculator stops you going to those levels, and it has essentially some stops on it. So it will tell you, the whole point of the calculator is, what is the fastest physiological rate that you as a human being, so you put in all of your anthropometrics and everything, and it tells you, you and your physiology, your body fat percentage, you would be able to eat 100 calories per day, and your deficit is maybe 2,100 calories per day. And based on your physiology, all of those calories should be able to come from adipose tissue. So the energy transfer rate from adipose, you know, lipolysis into our blood, crossing over into the mitochondria to be burned, it will tell you what that rate is. But then the calculator will say, but don't be stupid. Don't eat that. We're going to show you the number, but the number you should eat at, and it might say 683, whatever. And I think the lowest, I've picked that number because I can remember seeing it, and really no one's typically been able to put in a real life human and get it to give you a number lower than around that value. And there's lots of stops that it puts in. For instance, let's just take protein intake, because people typically understand it. If you're eating 390 calories per day, how do you think you're going to be able to consume fiber? How do you think you're going to be able to consume even an essential level of fatty acids, and consuming enough protein? Because one of the key things as well, a huge number of questions I've had around perimenopausal women, postmenopausal women, and lots of the research I present is in that group. There's a great paper, a longitudinal, and showing lots of follow-up data, which is fantastic, in postmenopausal women. And it's a key group of individuals who seemingly will benefit from this, but there are maybe some contraindications with that group, which my calculator then stops them being issues. And in the research, we're seeing things like bone mineral density loss, obviously. So, you know, stopping that happening, as a standard, because there's no, in the research, you could tell before the study started, it's what was going to happen. So regarding the definitions, I've given you sort of an idea of, okay, the calorie intake, no one should be surprised if they're getting something between 700, 800, 900 calories per day. Look, it tells me to eat about 1400, but I know that I don't get the benefits of aggressive dieting at 1400. So it then gives you abilities to say, actually, I'm going to eat 1100. And then it will say, okay, based on that, you will need to refeed at this level, at this frequency, to stop lean body mass loss. But I get the huge benefits in adherence and losing food noise and hunger, like cooking for children, which I think we're going to maybe touch a little bit on child nutrition, cooking for children. I'm a picker. I will pick at their food. I call it daddy tax. There's sweets around. I'm not someone who lives like a monk. Lots of people sort of maybe make judgments about the way people look. And because I look a certain way, mainly because of genetics and a long history of training, they think, oh, he's one of these people who's just anal and thinks about everything he eats and goes to the gym all the time. Like, truth be told, I am bored of the gym. I would much rather spend time with my children and working, way more than, but I just go in and do some bicep curls and tricep pushdowns. And food wise, I love food the same as a lot of people. So, and it's another reason why I'm quite passionate about aggressive dieting, because it means I can spend the absolute minimum amount of time dieting, thinking about food, doing these things. But I find it fun as well. It's a nice endeavor. I kind of say this in general about aggressive or moderate approaches. If it's not do you swear on your podcast?
Yeah, you're very welcome to.
Okay, cool. So if it's not a fuck yes, it's a fuck no. It's that sort of typical phrase. And that should be, it's like, oh, you run a marathon. It's like, God, I hate this. This is rubbish. It's like, no, people go, oh, I'm training for this marathon. It's really exciting. It's like, oh, it's hard work. That's how people should see a dieting process. It's not, oh, poor me. It should be, I am so privileged that I get to do this. I can pay for a coach, or I have the knowledge to do this. I can afford food. I can afford the type of food I need. And again, with this process, it's not, you're not going to hate yourself into change. You're not going to hate yourself into a maple syrup diet. You're going, oh my goodness, have you heard about this amazing new protocol, which is going to promote health and promote losing weight in a healthy way, but is also going to be quite exciting because you get insane results that you can see really on a daily basis instead of a grind for 12 weeks.
When I think of I was trying to think of, just put myself in the shoes of a listener who hears, you know, you talking about dieting with larger deficits, going faster, yeah, in a world where, you know, I think we're all on the same page of sustainability. We're living under it should be sustainable for the, it should be sustainable in air quotes, meaning like long term, what we're trying to do is get yourself to a healthy body weight and remain there. So what you're doing necessarily sustainable or not, but we are ultimately trying, we're not just saying, hey, this is something that I'm recommending people do before a photo shoot. This is something you're recommending as part of a long-term approach to getting healthy for the long-term. And I can think of at least six things that might come to somebody's mind as like, yeah, this is a bad idea because of this. So six kind of issues that somebody might take. And I will open the door for you to go as deep into any of them as you'd like. And I, again, broken them down into physiology and then maybe on the psychology side of things. And again, we can keep them short. We can go deep into it. But I think from a physiology side, and you can add or subtract to this list, but we have fears around metabolic adaptation, about ruining somebody's metabolism, metabolic damage, you know, misconceptions about metabolic adaptation. And then we have muscle loss, lean body mass loss, and we have intense, intense amounts of hunger. And so, and again, I'm not stating that those are a fact. I'm saying these are the things that somebody might hear or think of when they think of, oh, I'm going to go into a huge deficit. And so we start with like metabolic adaptation, damage, that's something from a metabolism perspective. This is a bad idea because of my metabolism. What do we say to that?
Yeah. It's such a cool question. It's actually the start of my seminar, the first third. I go through all of the research and we do a little sort of group task around some of these, exactly as you said. It's not necessarily that I say, not that you guys think this, but what do you think a client might say? Or what do you think a family member, because we understand about support networks and people undermining processes because they're just getting at us and saying, well, that's not healthy. And so all of these things you brought up do come up. And I go through in depth all of the research because as well, you know, it's about 50% coaches, 50% gen pop who come to my seminar. And I want them to be able to protect themselves from these sort of attacks from wherever they may come from. So the metabolic adaptation one or metabolic damage or these sorts of things, it's quite a misunderstood area. And I have seen some supposedly sort of evidence-based, one of them being a sort of podcaster in the UK, and talking about as though if you diet someone in 1,000 calories, they will immediately adapt to that number of calories. So it was basically like, oh, you want to diet them on a high number. So when they adapt to that, you then lower it down and then they adapt to that. And I sort of say, you know, if you adapt, if you can genuinely maintain your body weight on 1,000 calories a day, you don't need to go any further because you're already arrived. You've arrived at Shredsville. Like, you're shredded if you're genuinely maintaining on that. And, it, you know, Rosenbaum is a key researcher in this area. And if anyone sort of geeky wants to go and look up some of this stuff, but I talk about this this rubber band analogy, which is your best scenario of understanding it. And if we go, if people are just listening, imagine you're holding a rubber band in your hand. It is kind of going back to your physics classes. And if you didn't like physics, sorry, but we talk about potential energy. And if we think of metabolic adaptation as moving away from where our body typically likes to sit. So some people aren't comfortable with a set point or settling point, but roughly where your body sits when you're not trying to apply pressure to the system, whether that's body weight up or body weight down. And if we go, if we diet, we stretch that rubber band, and basically the potential energy, the energy for that rubber band to flick away becomes higher. I did actually, when I was in Sydney in 2019, I was talking about this a bit. And I was saying rubber band, and I honestly, 250 people just blank faces. And I was like, I'd had a big thing about pick and mix. None of them knew what pick and mix were. And they were like, and I said, do you know what pick and mix are? And I said, do you know sweets? And they're like, oh, lollies. And I was like, no, a lolly is not, that's, and then I licked a lolly. Yeah. And then there was a whole thing about innuendos, like, oh no, mate, that's a gobby. And I was like, oh, don't go there. And then they said, I said, do you know what a rubber band is? And then this girl in the front row goes, do you mean like a glute band? And I was like, oh my God. Fuck. I said, fine, we'll talk about glute bands. But anyway, so I said, so you've got a glute band and you stretch it. And so if we think about a glute band, you stretch it and you ping it. The faster you stretch it, if we then stop and hold, and you think about the tension between your hands, and then you pull it slowly to that same place, what's the tension? It's exactly the same whether you pull it. And that is the best analogy for understanding how this metabolic reduction happens. If you lose weight, you know, the amount of weight you lose is going to impact on your metabolic rate, regardless. The distance you move from that settling point is going to impact your metabolic rate and the metabolic adaptation that you mentioned. So things impacting like your NEAT. And realistically, you look at the research, and I talk about all the research, and if you consider this pragmatically, you know, on the ground, real life, you've got a study where we've got people dieting for 6 months, 26 weeks-ish, 24 to 26 weeks, and they are dieting on a moderate calorie deficit. And then the alternative group is doing a much more aggressive approach, but they only diet for 8 to 11 weeks. And this is one particular study. It might be Nackers et al. 2010, but I can't remember. And you look at these graphs and you get this massive weight loss and then this maintenance of weight loss while the other group is still dieting. Now, one of the key points in that study is, well, the metabolic adaptation was no greater in the fast weight loss group. But secondly, we then get this point of people who criticize fast rates of weight loss, and there's a couple of other studies that are often quoted where it's like, well, when they dieted slower, that they were able to maintain their training a bit better. But the difference in the studies is, well, this group lost twice as much weight. So they could go back to maintenance or their small surplus twice as quickly. But they don't carry forward. And you have to understand and interpret the research. It's not the researcher's fault. It's the people interpreting it. Because the research can't do that. They can't add in another part to the study. But, oh, you know that group that finished? We then got them to keep doing the training, go back to maintenance. We kept following them. And, oh, look, they were stronger than the other group at 8 weeks. So this whole idea that it's going to damage metabolism, it's just not true. It just doesn't happen. And so if we equate for total weight loss, you're probably ending up better doing the fast approach.
That reminds me of just the Matador study, which was like basically one group dieting 2 weeks on and then maintenance for 2 weeks and 2 weeks on and maintenance for 2 weeks. And they ended up with, like, let's just say like 16 weeks spent in a deficit over 32 total weeks. And the other group was 16 weeks in a straight deficit. And they were like, the group that did diet breaking lost less lean body mass, maintained their metabolism a little bit better, but they didn't measure it. They didn't equate for time. And so if they had taken the group that did continuous dieting and let them go to maintenance for 16 weeks and test both groups at the end of 32 weeks, I'm betting on either there being no benefit or I'm betting on the other group. And the quote that you'll hear is, if you drop somebody's calories too low, they'll adapt and have nowhere to go. And like, I always like the biggest adaptation your body makes is losing weight. Like, people are like, oh, you're going to adapt. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, because you're going to be a lot smaller, a lot quicker. You know, like, that is the biggest adaptation. I know it's not necessarily, when we talk about metabolic adaptation, we're talking about like independent of the weight you lose, but the biggest adaptation in the true sense of the word adaptation that your body is making in response to the deficit size is becoming smaller. So you're right. Like, that person will adapt quicker by losing weight quicker. And the rubber band analogy is something I've, you know, whatever, credited to you on this podcast multiple times as a great analogy for just that potential energy. So from a metabolic adaptation perspective, we're looking at just a very, it's proportionate. It's there's no exponential shift based on speed. It's proportionate. If you lose weight more quickly, we see a proportionate response, and in all of the pros and the cons, it's not like there's an exponential hack here. You know, we see metabolic adaptation happen within 24 hours of people fasting for 24. This stuff happens super quickly, and it's not like, if it's going to happen in proportion to the size and the length of the deficit, it's not, there's no way that we're going to be able to find a perfect, like a perfect size duration relationship to optimize a result. And so I just don't think that that's, I think you answered that incredibly well. I think that also you could use the same exact analogy for muscle loss, where people are like, okay, like I diet super aggressively. Like, and you even mentioned it just now. It's like, I diet super aggressively, I'm at more risk for muscle loss. It's like, you are, but like, if we equate for time, and you could spend some time on the back end of that deficit, going back to maintenance more quickly, even maybe into a small surplus more quickly, like, we are probably talking about a either net very similar outcome or potentially a net greater outcome in terms of net, you know, losing less lean body mass over a certain period of time.
And I will just say on that, the point, I guess, initially in my thinking for the calculator was allowing people to, so where another area this came from, really me creating the calculator, was I wrote an article in Alan Aragon's Research Review many years ago, and I essentially discussed the optimal method for dieting to single digit body fat. And I produced this kind of essentially what was a decaying rate of weight loss. And which is quite funny, because lots of what I base, I'm basing kind of the aggressive dieting stuff I do was on this Alpert 2005 paper, which I fell asleep reading the paper twice. That's in one paper. It's such a tough read. I'm good at maths, but this is just next level. But it's really what has been programmed into the behind the scenes of the calculator. But the idea behind this article was, at what rate do you need to lose at different stages of dieting to single-digit body fats to stave off lean body mass loss? And the key thing that I guess even was surprising for me was, even if you do this, okay, 2 pounds a week or 1 pound a week or half a pound a week, this calculator essentially showed if you're getting to stage lean, and the actual deficit that you can create to where the deficit can be provided for by adipose tissue, once you're at that level of body fat, we're talking a few hundred calories. We're talking 200, 300, 350 calories. So you get to a point where you go, oh, well, this is very interesting. If we take it into the real day, who's getting the best results in the natural bodybuilding scene? It's the likes of the 3DMJ gurus. What are they doing? They're dieting people for long, 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 long periods. And, you know, I still remember Alberto Nunes posting a picture of him 12 weeks out, and every comment, even from like knowledgeable guys, was, Alberto, it looks like you're already there. This is kind of surprising. Why do you think this is what 12 weeks looks like? And he goes, you don't understand lean if you think this is stage ready. And it wasn't just that. It's the idea that he maybe did only have 4 pounds to lose. But people go, well, you can use 4 pounds in 4 to 8 weeks. And he's like, no, 4 pounds when you're that lean. And he didn't talk about this, but this is what I relate it to. It's like, you want to lose 0.5 pound, 1 pound, 2 pounds when you're that lean and have that little body fat. The actual rate that we can get those fatty acids out of that tissue is so slow. So when we talk about lean body mass loss, my calculator will tell you, if you eat here, you're going to stop that happening. But if you choose to dip below that, this is why we then need the refeeds to protect some of that lean body mass. Because we can protect it by providing, obviously, carbohydrate, muscle glycogen, these sorts of things. We're not immediately breaking down those sorts of muscle fibers. Lean body mass loss, it's a boogeyman as well. I will also say that people are like, oh, I've lost muscle. And really, they just lost fat. They weren't as muscular as they thought they were. Or they may be not feeling as strong. But we understand that there's, you know, neurological impacts of that. And you can regain muscle. So even if you, you know, got it a little bit wrong, you can regain muscle so quickly. And then you get back to that horrible ceiling that we never get past. And you're back where you were, but you lost fat twice as fast.
Yeah. And something you touched on there, maybe we can say a little bit more, more explicitly, is this idea that, like, at higher levels of body fat, you can sustain a larger deficit without the risk of muscle loss. But the leaner you get, the smaller the deficit should be if you are trying to maximize the retention of lean body mass.
Exactly.
Which kind of plays into this question that I will ultimately ask about who can do this more reasonably and less reasonably, or who can go more aggressive, less aggressive, or should, or, and those are some more nuanced questions. But talk a little bit about we can quote research, we can talk more generally about just what we see in when we compare. Maybe it was a study you were just talking about before, just like low calorie dieting versus very low calorie dieting in terms of like reported levels of hunger.
This is the thing, and I bring up lots and lots of data and graphs to try and explain this, to show exactly what happens. And it is so funny, because as much as I guess people who pay to come and hear me speak more often than not have a level of respect, like, I respect this person, you know, I'm going to pay this money because I think I'm going to get good information, they still turn up and go, I still don't get it. I still don't believe it. I need to know. I need to understand more. And then they understand it by the end of the presentation, but they still go away. And I don't know, sorry if I said this at the beginning of the talk, but someone just saying, I could not believe it. Yeah, I did say it. He said, I didn't not trust you. But when he came back to me, a client himself, and said, I'm not hungry anymore. I'm just wowed, and just nonstop. Lots of the coaches coming saying, look, I've tried it on myself because I just wanted to really get a grip of what I'm asking people to do. And I said, it's a fantastic idea. And, you know, some people, one girl in Sydney said, this isn't going to work for me. I love food. I relate to my clients because I'm always eating. I have competed, but this is what I look like. I'm not some super lean fitness professional. I'm a normal human being who wants to stay healthy and wants to eat well. This is never going to work for me. And, you know, 3 weeks later, I've created an aggressive diet coaching group just to, I guess, help people that came to the seminars. And it might be something that I extend on when everything goes public and online, and I'm probably going to create... I've decided that I don't really want people just going to the calculator and just plugging numbers in and doing it, because I talk the second and third of the seminar. There's lots around the coaching process, understanding how to troubleshoot, essentially compassionate approaches, a big discussion around positive weight regain. So there's a lot to be understood there with regards to adherence and long-term weight maintenance of the weight loss. And but yeah, she just turned around and was like, I can't believe it. I don't understand how it does this. And I said, well, weren't you listening to all the presentation slides? So one of the best papers that I like because of the visuals it gives you is this, is Coutinho et al. 2018. Because what it does is it compares pre-dieting phase, weight loss phase, and weight maintenance phase hunger. And it measures the hunger in quite a nice, nuanced way. And it gives you details on, you know, pre-meal hunger, hunger immediately, you know, post-prandial hunger. And it gives you such a good visual for what people then do just realize in real life. You give someone a 500 calorie meal in real life and in the study, and you give someone this maybe 200 calorie meal. And hunger post-meal, you know, desire to eat post-meal, in the 200 calorie meal goes pretty much to zero. Oh, I'm satisfied. That's all good. The other one does come down as you'd expect, but it doesn't go as low as the other one. Then likewise, the regain of hunger in that post-prandial and post-absorptive period, so that, you know, we talk about satiety of a meal, but then the satiation and our want for our next meal, you see increases at a much more rapid rate at moderate calorie deficits. Whereas when you hit like this 3 to 5 day utopia and onwards on an aggressive diet, and it shows it in the studies, and everyone reports this in real life, if they follow a few, I guess, some of the caveats that I have for this, you don't think about that next meal. You can very much just, for me, one of the reasons I also like aggressive dieting is because it gives you loads more time in your day. One of the sections of the presentation, I talk about its impact on sleep, and it really is quite astounding what it does to your sleep. I end up functioning off about 4 hours sleep a night, and it just means I literally gain another 2 to 4 hours a day if I'm just really, really busy. And so it's quite a nice like little effect. Well, I get leaner, that's all good, but you know, mental clarity and sleeping less and not thinking about food or preparing food as much. But yeah, so with regards to this hunger, we see, you know, a difference in pre-meal hunger, post-prandial hunger immediately after eating. And what we see within the research as well is adherence shoots up. And there's two obvious reasons for that. One of them is obviously you're less hungry. But the other reason, which everyone always gets, I sort of say, why do you think that is? And everyone shouts it out. Well, it's the results. And I'm like, yeah. I posted yesterday this person saying, you know, I lost 10 pounds or 9 pounds in 9 or 10 days. I can't remember. It was one or the other way. And I was like, geez, you know, that's unbelievable. Not really unbelievable, but it is just fantastic for her, considering this is someone who's like, oh, I've been struggling to lose weight. And as well, I'm like, well, how's your energy? How's your hunger? And she's like, I feel amazing. And she said to me, was it her or someone else said, I'm not sure I've hit the utopia, but energy levels are good and I'm not really hungry. And I said, what do you mean? That sounds like utopia to me. You've just lost 5 pounds in 4 days. And then someone said to me, someone from, I think it was a Singapore talk, said, I lost that in 6 days. And I was like, geez, I always talk about the first time I aggressive dieted and I lost a pound a day for the first 11 days. And it's just a different mindset of dieting. You go, oh my God, like I've never seen anything like this in any of my dieting history. And clients do just get this thing of, this is something special. Because it's also, if they can get past that 3 to 5 days. So I do have a protocol. I feel like reverse dieting has become it has been for a while, but a big buzzword within the industry. And people are almost like, sign up to my program. In the first 8 weeks of that program, you're reverse dieting. And the research doesn't support that. I really want to say that clearly, publicly. You're buying an ebook, you're doing a whatever, doing a program. The research doesn't support this idea that you need to. I saw one, it's a bit of an old ebook. And I won't say the woman who wrote it, but she, you know, she's typically known as an evidence-based community person. And it's like, you need to diet for as many, you need to reverse diet for as many weeks as you've been dieting before. And I was like, based on what? Based on nothing. You've pulled out of your ass and it's unethical. So I have like basically a 3 to 7 day protocol to start the diet well, based on actual evidence and actual physiology. And so, you know, it gives you this, you know, starting from the best point, but then also you get this amazing start to the process. And what we know from the wider body of research is people's, you know, one of the correlates or factors that we know is most strongly related to weight loss, total weight loss and weight loss maintenance is initial magnitude of weight loss. And it's like, we're talking about, oh, we're going to do little habits. We're going to just take one fish oil a day. We're going to just eat a cup of vegetables. We're going to eat a fist of fats. And that's all you're going to do this week. And this week you're going to focus on eating to 80% full. And this week, no, the evidence actually says that's the worst thing you can do. The evidence actually shows if you just throw the kitchen sink, you do everything, you make big changes, that's what helps people. And I actually wrote down sustainability and photo shoot, because it's one of your earlier comments, because I think it's a really good thing to mention again now. But just I actually discourage against photo shoots, bodybuilding competitions, anything with a deadline, because it stops people being flexible with their life. If something happens and you have a deadline, you will not give yourself compassion. You will go, I'm behind. I'm going to dig in more on willpower. I'm going to deny myself this food. And the absolute worst thing you can do in any dieting protocol, but I'm trying to get people away from in my aggressive protocol, is food restriction, restrictive mindset. You know, yes, you're having to put restrictions on yourself, but your mentality has to be, not I'm going to dig deeper within myself. It needs to be, I'm coming at this from a, and that's why it's good, because most of the time on an aggressive diet, you're not trying. You're literally going, oh my God, this is so easy. That's why it's super cool. That's why actually I talk about some of the clinical research around binge eating and what, you know, one of the other, you may have written this down, I know you're going to mention physiological and psychological aspects, but people say, is it going to give people eating disorders? And actually in the research, the opposite is true. You know, it categorically, aggressive dieting or level of calorie deficit is not correlated to onset of eating disorders. And I remember presenting that at a conference, and one of the other presenters was a literal world leader in eating disorders, NICE guidelines sort of contributor. And I looked down at her when I said that, and she was like, and I was like, phew. I was like, okay, cool. Like, I knew it was right, but I was worried. So on this topic of hunger, it's just, it's wide ranging in terms of its impact. It's not causing eating disorders, and it's allowing people to be adherent for the right reasons, because they don't want to, you know, these cravings are being reduced, that they don't have to dig into willpower and actually end up with something I talk about is disinhibition. We really want to get away from being disinhibited around food. As soon as they're presented with Krispy Kreme donuts or whatever, I need to eat them all, because you can undermine all of your progress on a diet if you haven't got control of that side of the equation.
Yeah, I think that there's, we want it, everybody, every coach, educator trying to actually in this field, trying to help people get healthier, is trying to find the balance of what level of change should I put on this person? What's going to make them ultimately the most successful? That's the question we're asking. And it's on an individual basis, but I think what you're saying is that, one, I think 100% true that there's something here of there's a tighter correlation between what is sustainable between people who actually see a lot of initial progress versus people who are making very small changes and don't lose a lot of weight in the beginning. Like it's actually ironic, paradoxical, of it's more sustainable that you did the extreme thing because you tied, you know, this is actually working and there's a bit of buy-in and there's a bit more motivation. And so I think that that's a bit paradoxical. I think people don't think about that. I think people, like you said, most people default to a tiptoe, very small changes, very small this, because they think that that's easier. But they're not they're forgetting the fact that actually humans can rationalize discomfort for reward. We can. And it's about finding that relationship of juice worth the squeeze. And it's, yes, there's not a lot of juice that you have to, you know, you don't have to do much work to be like, I'm going to have a fist of fats and I'm going to have one more broccoli floret with each meal. And fine, but the return on that investment is very low also. And people are forgetting that as well. And so I don't think you would say every single person in every single circumstance, you know, as aggressively as possible. But I think we need to get rid of this idea of like, yeah, we're taking very small steps with very small changes, just spending 6 months out of a deficit, just building these tiny habits, because I think that is an appeal to, hey, let's do stuff that people can do. But I think we are forgetting that there's somewhat of just trying to lose weight, just trying, being in the headspace of giving effort is finite. And I think if you burn that somebody's match in the first 3 months and they've gotten nothing out of it, your heart's in the right place because you wanted them to eat more fruits and vegetables and go for more walks, and you should do all that stuff. But if somebody hasn't gotten, can't sink their teeth into the return on their investment in the first 12 weeks, that in and of itself, that is unsustainable. It's unsustainable for people to keep putting forth effort without getting that return. So I think that like you said, it's certainly not straightforward. And in fact, if you were good to look at the research, it's more likely the case that people who make big changes and get big returns end up buying in more and seeing actual more sustainable results.
Yeah, I think with that soundbite, you've really hit a huge nail on the head with regards to any level of dieting leads to a taxation of your mental time resources, you know, of all resources, and you have to get results with that. On the subjects of sustainability as well, I want to sort of make the point that the biggest, perhaps, nutritional conundrum that we have is weight loss maintenance beyond anything else. Anyone who's still debating low carb versus low fat is a muppet. It's a complete waste of everyone's time. I think it's still a good point of discussion to discuss these rates of weight loss, but it's nowhere near the issue that we have globally of how can we help people maintain the weight. And the thing I want to say is the research, as far as I'm concerned, is very, very heavily weighted in the favor of faster, more aggressive protocols. And you can just read this in numerous sort of meta-analyses, systematic reviews of this, where it's essentially comparing for fast versus moderate. And those who have a greater initial weight loss are those who maintain a statistically significant and clinically significant amount of weight loss, whether that's 5 or 10%. Than their counterparts who lost at a moderate rate at every year of follow-up. So if the study follows up 1 year, 3 year, 5 years, 7 years, those who chose the faster approach have the better outcomes. Now, it might be that 7 years, only 30% of subjects were still maintaining 10%, which is still fantastic out of, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of data points that we've got. But the biggest discussion still on the table is, how can we get that to 100% of people maintaining? And that's a totally different discussion. But if you are in the business of helping people change their body fat and their body composition, you have to ask yourself, I've been doing this question. I did it I was in Arizona, and I sort of said, okay, I'm going to ask you a question. Today, at the beginning of my talk, and most of these people didn't know me, it was like 200 trainers. And I said, if you had to pick today, if you would use an aggressive approach or a moderate approach, and that's all you could ever do with every client ever again, you have to pick one, which would you choose? So going back to your point of like, I would never say this was the case of like, you have to pick one. But if you had to, which one would you pick? And I said, and it's not like a scenario of going, right, if you had to pick one, missionary or doggy style, which would you pick? And be like, oh, it depends on my mood. It depends on my mood. No, you have to pick one. And in that question, I did say there is one right answer, and it was missionary. But anyway, the answer to this question is, if we're basing it on the research, unequivocally, I think we need to be picking the aggressive, the rapid fat loss, the aggressive deficits, because that is what's showing us the better results overall. And it's difficult for people to think of that, because most of us are inherently against aggressive approaches, because all we attribute that to is scam artists, quick fix artists, and this stuff. We don't attribute it to good coaching, behavior change protocols, multi-phasic approaches to dieting. So you discuss the Matador study. It's a very crude multi-phasic. It's very fixed, two on, two off, whatever. Whereas if we can go, okay, we're going to do rapid fat loss for X number of weeks, and then we can choose based on a life circumstance what we're going to do, whether that's someone's menstrual cycle or their feelings, or whether the calculator says they're going to start losing lean body mass if they continue for longer, we can go back to a more moderate approach. And the nice thing about this scenario is, well, if you go back to a moderate approach, one, it gives you more dietary flexibility, food flexibility, greater opportunity for micronutrient intake, et cetera, dietary variety. But also there's a lag on our hunger ever coming back, because in that study, the Coutinho et al. Study, what shows is when we go back to the weight maintenance phase, hunger does start to come back. But actually within the aggressive dieting group, you know, I'd encourage people to go and read it or just come to my seminar and I'll explain it all to you. But we do have this issue of once people stop dieting, that's when things do need to become sustainable. Don't coach people for fat loss for their whole life. It sucks. No one wants a calorie count for the rest of their life. That's rubbish. They need to go. And this is what I talk about within the seminar is, okay, we make it multiphasic, and then we can have these opportunities for coaching to live. If someone pays you to work with you for 4 months, let's say, do you want to spend that whole 4 months coaching them to lose weight? Or, and the answer to this is completely rhetorical, a way better thing to do is get them all of the results in 6 weeks and then coach them to live and maintain that, because that's the thing that people truly struggle with. Can we do that through calorie counting? And then good. And then let's pull away the calorie counting. And then we need to find habits that have the same magnitude of effect. You can't give someone the habit of taking a fish oil a day. It's not a habit that's going to change the outcome. We need to go, okay, what's the correct dose of exercise? Because we also understand that more exercise is not actually better. That within the research, it's quite interesting in terms of physical activity. A prescribed walking, 2,000 calories of walking a week doesn't actually outperform 1,000. Why is that? Well, we need to understand that more. But just going more with exercise actually doesn't actually help. And we can do a lot more with, you know, there's maybe half a dozen to a dozen nutritional habits that we can put in play for the rest of someone's life that we do know are strongly correlated to weight loss maintenance success.
I'm gonna put some words in your mouth, and then you're gonna, that sounded, we're off to, you know, back to this missionary chat, but and then you're gonna chew them up and you're gonna spin them back to me. So,
okay.
I hear coaching to live. I love that terminology. I've used it, you know, ever since just going through MNU and hearing it there for the first time. And the one's counter argument might be, okay, but because the strategy I've chosen to lose weight has been by definition further from the type of life I'm going to live. So let's use some numbers. If you're thinking long-term, my maintenance calories can be around 2000. I used 800 calories to lose weight. That is a proxy for I've had to make a lot of lifestyle and nutrition changes from 800 to 2000, which means during the time I was losing weight, I was doing something that didn't really depict what I'm going to, like, they are more separate issues now, where like if you were 2000 calories and worked your way down to like 1400 calories, like your habits have changed more gradually. They've changed in absolute magnitude less. What you were doing, you can reflect what you'll ultimately have to do a little bit more. When you do this, they are different. You have like, hey, we're 800 calories means our nutrition choices are going to be vastly different from what they might be at 2000. The way we handle social events is going to be vastly different. Would you say, yes, I hear you. Still a net win. Still two separate problems. Maybe the leap from the type of problems you'll have to solve to live on 800 versus the type of, and again, we are kind of, the whole point of this is that they are probably, the ratio of work to results is much greater in that more on the aggressive side. But it is a problem that's worth solving. It is that leap from what I was doing to lose weight to what I'll have to ultimately do to maintain this forever. Although a greater leap, still problems I'd rather solve because I'm 30 pounds down and I didn't have to spend the entire year doing it, for example.
Yeah, that's such a wonderful question. It's nice to be interviewed by you because that's such a unique question. I love it. And I'm probably going to now implement it into a slide in the seminar because it's a fantastically insightful coaching question. The answer is twofold. Categorically, 100%, the benefits for a person who, so I have a slide where I talk about who shouldn't do this, who should do this. Now, someone who's just struggling to lose weight, and every trainer and every person in the world knows someone or is that person, and maybe as well, I get to here and I can never get past that position. This just undermines all of these weight loss resistant type issues. Likewise, it just is a much nicer process. Cool. Knock yourself out, diet on 1400 calories and be hungry for the whole time, or get there twice as fast with no hunger. It isn't double the effort. It's half the effort, double the results. So it's 400% better is what I'm saying. And I'm basing that 100% off the research. So don't try, get double the results is what I'm selling. Okay. It's a magical snake oil powder that actually is evidence based. On top of that, the second part of the answer I want to say is, as much as it sounds like this is dramatically different from how you should eat normally, it's not. If you were to follow what they do in the research, which is one, total meal replacement, 100%, you're drinking these stupid shakes, and no wonder the results are so horrific in the follow-up. However, if you choose any of the studies where actually they used some food, we see a slightly different picture, but likewise, this is why you have certain stops. And I've created these resources, which you get free along with within the seminar. I think anyone who comes to the seminar, really, you're paying virtually nothing. You're paying for the seminar and you're getting the calculator free. You're getting all of the resources free. You're getting the coaching group free, which all of these things, when I release it to the public, will all be their own sort of, I guess, add-ons and bolt-ons if people want all of the foods list, if they want all of the... So I've created essentially a calories per gram of fiber resource and taken all of your different plant sources of fiber, which we know we should get a good fiber, dietary fiber variety. But the keto people are like, oh, I get 20 grams of fiber a day, and it's all from broccoli. We know that that's not the type of diet that you want to have. Just because you're hitting an absolute number, it's no good. It's like saying, oh, I get enough fat per day, but it all comes from butter. It's not good enough. So the reason it has these stops on it is because actually what the difference between what you're doing on this aggressive diet and what you might be doing on a moderate or on your maintenance is literally just like potato. Cool. Chuck in some potato to your aggressive diet and then chuck in your favorite ice cream or chuck in your favorite sweet or your favorite whatever meal. Done. That's taken your 800 calories to 2000. Slightly increase your portion sizes if you want. Be a bit more relaxed with your cooking methods. You know, instead of having my grilled chicken, my George Foreman, whatever, I'm going to have it stir-fried with my veg. I'm going to have my veg stir-fried now, etc. But actually, it's not vastly different. And so that's why your question is so, so interesting, because it's like, it does really feel like that. It's like, yeah, it's so vastly different. But actually, when you look at the foods that you should be choosing on 800, it's the basis of where people pretty much start. Like a coach goes, where do I start? Like most coaches I've ever seen start with protein. And that's probably what we're starting with regards to this. So you have all of these foods and actually you then build it from there. You've got, okay, we've got veg, I've got my protein, I've got some pulses, etc. And then I'm going to go, okay, now I'm going to add stuff that isn't particularly nutrient dense. Fruit, so, so healthy and like has such strong correlations to like all cause mortality and cancer, etc. We should be eating fruit, but don't believe you're eating fruit for a boatload of vitamins and minerals. Like you're not. It's, you're not eating an apple and getting all of your zinc and your magnesium. It's not the case. But people, I think, believe that you eat an orange and you get sort of, it's like eating a multivitamin, or you eat a grape and they're not. But it's these bioactive compounds, these polyphenols, these things we don't really understand, but for some reason, pretty unequivocally, it's making you live longer. So add those things back in. Yes, I am telling people to remove those for a period of 2 to 3 to 4 weeks. But do you know what? How much of those things were they eating before they started this? And how much, it is a cost benefit of analysis in general dieting. So yeah, the sort of punchline answer to it is it's 100% worth it. And simply because you're only going to be dieting for a quarter to half of the time with half the effort, you've got much more time to go back to coaching to live, to learning to live, to eating like what your life will be like. And really there's just no point of, and I will say as well, I say people should start this diet with a good baseline habit base, a good habit base. So if you simply are eating completely erratically, you have no idea how to cook, you don't know what foods you should be choosing, you shouldn't be doing any dieting, quite frankly, because as soon as you lose 5% or 10% of your weight loss, you are still the same person. My way is just better because you lost more weight. So you're gonna be in a better place for a bit longer, but you're going to screw yourself up. You need, that's why working with a coach, or at least improving your relationship with food or whatever, is good. But anything that people throw at aggressive dieting as a negative is 100% just another negative of a moderate calorie deficit. You know, the eating disorder one, you can have an eating disorder at calorie maintenance, any hyper focus on food, orthorexia type scenarios. It's like, it's taxation on your mindset. It's over emphasis of food and healthy food and whatever. So yeah, that's my answer.
Excellent. Let's do a couple, we're coming up on the hour. Let's do a couple bullets.
Cool.
I'm imagining your slide on this, a couple, like a T chart here of who should and who shouldn't either do or consider doing this.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a funny slide because my first bullet point is athletes. And when I say athletes, I'm talking elite athletes. I'm talking people who have performance in mind. And the point of that is I've worked with the athletes at the top, the world record holders, the gold medal, Olympics, and they still wanted to improve body fat. You know, they wanted to improve power to weight ratio. They needed to make weight for their weight class. And it's annoying because you're like, can you not just keep close to your weight class, you idiot? But they're just humans. They aren't these robots that people believe them to be. But realistically, any aggressive protocol is going to significantly impact performance. So that's one thing. But then people start going, well, I do BJJ 3 times a week. Is that a thing? People just keep trying to push. And I will say this, I pretty much recommend people pulling back on all exercise volume whilst doing this. It's, you go to maintenance, you do not try to overreach, you certainly don't go anywhere near overtraining, it's biggest bang for buck, it's stimulating as much muscle as possible, but without taxation. And that's simply because recovery capabilities are reduced. But it's more just so, it's more related to feelings and hunger. Every single person who ignores what I say comes back and says, oh, I did a really high volume, really hard leg session yesterday. And I'm really hungry today. I was cruising and everything was fine. So I just pushed the boat out. And I said, I told you half your volume, maintain intensity, stop doing loads of cardio. And people say, well, I'm training for a marathon. And I said, okay, cool. Don't aggressive diet. But I want to aggressive diet. Cool. Don't run a marathon. You can't choose both. And then people, and I will say this, I have worked with elite athletes and we have tried to do certain protocols. And within the coaching group, I am helping. I'm not going to talk about it hugely publicly. It's not in the seminar. But if someone does come and say, look, we're doing this, I don't know, what would you do, Martin? I say, well, when I work with a client and they put these stupid scenarios that I had to help them with because they're my client, this is what I did and this is what we found worked best. But it's realistically, so that's one, athletes, and also typically people who, CrossFitters, High Rocks, all of these things that people are obsessed with. No. Choose one or the other. Take a period off doing that for a bit. Focus on a little bit of strength programming, not all of this super, high glycogen, expensive exercise, etc. So that's one. I then talk about, basically people with clinical issues. But I will just say it's like, that's anyone who's like eating disorder realm, don't be doing any sort of dieting with them, but people still ignore it. So I put it on there. But it's definitely not specific to aggressive dieting. Then I talk about And to be honest, I've put this one in italics now with a bit of a question mark, which is postmenopausal women not using HRT simply because of the bone mineral density loss that is a potential issue. And estrogen and HRT is more protective of that. So it's just a group where I'm like, look, I'm telling you this, it's a discussion to be had. It's something to be aware of. It's do the research on it. But even within the research, there's some stuff that I'm reading that's just like, actually some of the bone mineral density loss, it's whether or not the loss that occurs is actually clinically meaningful, because we know when someone who is BMI 40 loses body weight, they lose lean body mass, but they have to, because the connective tissue that was holding that adipose tissue on the body is seen as lean body mass within a DEXA. Likewise with this, if your skeleton, you're going from 150 kilogram person to 110 kilogram person, the skeleton is simply doesn't have the mass, the pressures on the body to maintain it. You will just lose it because the skeleton doesn't have to hold this much, much bigger body up. So I do have some, there's some discussion within the seminar on that. Not a great deal. I'm trying to think of other people. People trying to conceive. It's probably not going to send the right hormonal signals. Everyone loves to talk about LH and FSH, energy availability. If you're trying to conceive, but what I say is, and what I have literally had someone do after my Dublin talk, is like, look, we're getting married, we're going on honeymoon, we're going to try for a baby, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. I have to lose this. And there's been IVF situations. It's like, well, it's not like, when should I stop drinking alcohol? It's like, if you're trying, you typically want to stop, because if you get pregnant and then you're drinking and you're pregnant, and not like taking your folate or whatever, it's like, you want to start taking that early doors while you're trying to conceive. This is like, well, if you get pregnant whilst dieting, it isn't a big deal. But as soon as you know you're pregnant, you're not dieting anymore. But if you're trying to increase your fertility and it's known that actually maybe that is a big factor for you, yeah, do you know what? Do that. But eating in such a low calorie way may hinder your chances of conception. But I will just say this, you're only doing this for a short period. You know, it's not like you're doing this for 6 months. But people do ask me, how long can you do it for? And I say, well, unfortunately, I can't tell you, because what's being done in the research, you know, and you're aware of Mr. AB, 385 days of zero calories per day. There's actually a couple of other interesting ones I talk about. And that was, I think he was in 1972. 1969, there was a guy who actually did intermittent starvation with intermittent very low energy diet. So they actually made him starve. And then they were like, oh, you can have 300 calories a day for a few weeks. Then they starved in 300. And it was something like 490 days of dieting. And so when people go, how long can I do this for? How long can I eat 800 calories a day? And I'm there going, oh, I wouldn't push it much higher than what the calculator says. And they're like, but I've done 30 days. I'm loving it. I'm cruising. I've done a few refeeds. You know, my bowel movement frequency is really good. I'm supplementing with all my, you know, bits and bobs to keep me okay. Can I go on longer? It's hard for me to go, there's a real contraindication for you to continue. I did it for 35 days and I was pretty lean. If you've got 20, 30, 40 kilos more body fat than me, it is difficult for me to say this shouldn't be done. But again, multiphasic, I talk about how people can do this and have some periods. Because the big thing for me is getting to the end, going back to maintenance calories and hunger going through the roof. If you stop at 5% weight loss, if you then stop at 10% weight loss, you can then have a diet break. So I talk about refeeds, diet breaks, aggressive refeeds. And one of the things you can do during a regular diet break, which is a psychological break, is actually go, what's my libido? What's my vigor for life? What's my ability to be a functioning member of society and a social member of my social group whilst maintaining this new human with this new, you know, metabolic adaptation, increase in hunger, reduced, you know, propensity to fidget and non-exercise activity thermogenesis. Oh, I did 2 weeks and I maintained my weight effortlessly. Great. I think we're ready to go back on and do more of this aggressive diet. Then we can check again in 3 to 4 weeks. So yeah, I'll stop talking there.
that happens sometimes. You're like, yeah, I'll breathe for a second. I'm on baby duty in 7 minutes. So we're gonna close it up cool. in a second. But I wanted to maybe just touch really quickly. We can get super nerdy into the hormones and some of the physiology, psychology of why does that happen? Where, I mean, it's like the most everybody who's like dieted has experienced. Oh, when I increased calories, whether that's like super mega slow, not evidence-based 22 calories a day reverse diet or a more, you know, a more evidence-based approach, hunger increased. Yeah. And I actually started to get hungrier as I was eating more. Can you speak a little bit to what might be happening there?
Yeah, it's such a tricky one. So I go into this in a lot of depth in the seminar because there's some obvious reasons and there are some reasons. There's a couple of reasons that, you know, we won't have time for me to talk about now, but I think we will see hopefully more in the research. The problem is the researchers don't always care about the whys. They just want to know the what. So it's like, oh, they were less hungry and they adhered more. But the best thing is, look how much weight they lost. And it's like, no, but if we could just find out the why the hunger switched off. Now, the obvious one is ketosis. You know, without necessarily going super low percentage carbohydrate or super low carb, like some of the people on the aggressive diets are like 50 grams of carbs, 60, 90, depending on where it's sitting them. And they're still getting this switching off at hunger, which is just as a result of the very low energy intake. And, you know, it leads to this increased presence of these ketones. And I've started encouraging people to, you know, if they want to measure their ketones, just to see, particularly for individuals who are like, oh, I've got to day four and I don't feel much less hungry. And this is one of those things where, a bit like I said, I've never measured my ketones when I do it, but I know just for a fact, 1400 versus 1100 and hunger is just gone. And so that is potentially one of those reasons. And there's a few other things relating to basically food volume or energy load and energy flux and an interaction with food passing through the duodenum and some of our appetite hormones of maybe it's in that postprandial, post-absorptive period or sort of pre-meal and then postprandial period is we're just not, have you ever intermittent fasted where you've kind of breakfast skipped? And this people can also liken this to, oh, I wasn't hungry. I didn't eat all breakfast. I got to lunchtime. I wasn't really hungry. I got to 2 p.m. and I ate my first meal. And everyone you say that to, what happened after? And they're like, oh, I need to eat. And this is my 8-hour window or whatever they've picked. They eat that meal. And what happens to hunger? Oh, I needed to keep eating for the rest of the day. Everything switched on. So there's some stuff there where it's like using the term switched on. A guru will come on a podcast and say switched on and expect you to guess what that means. I'm telling you, I don't know what that means necessarily, whether it is an interaction of our appetite hormones, whether it is an interaction of insulin, whether it is an implication of a reduction in blood ketones through the impact of insulin. But when we go back to maintenance, the biggest factor, as far as I'm concerned, is ketosis is just gone. And therefore, we just start to hear hunger again at a normal level. What I will also say is you're hearing a different magnitude of signal than where you were before you lost 5 kilos, 10 kilos of body fat. And a lot of that, again, for anyone who gets very lean, you will not stop hearing those signals until you regain the body fat. And we understand that's likely due to leptin and having reduced levels of leptin. And it's just that metabolic adaptation of the body's trying to tell you, get back to a state where as if there's a famine and we're going to starve, that you're going to be able to live and we're going to be able to, you know, pass our bloodline on. These are the sadly very strong evolutionary biological things that we're fighting against with regards to weight loss.
Yes. Yes, we are. Let's tell people where they can, I mean, if people are going to head out to Vegas, incredible. I highly recommend people go see you in person. It's going to be awesome. If they can't, is there a way for them to access this virtually? just plug all that stuff. Cause I think as much as I think we talked about a lot, I can imagine we were just scratching the surface. Cause I think there's quite a bit, quite a few more questions that people might be having, but I think that people have whet their appetite quite a bit. And so let people know where they can maybe access the full amount of what you are talking about in the seminar.
Yeah, cool. So I think what I'll probably do is the best place people can, if they're really interested, just go martin-mcdonald.com/links. And that's just a new page I've created where you can look at like our MNU enrollments are open at the moment. And I know last time we spoke, loads of people were interested in MNU. So I'm sure you can add that link in the show notes. But what I'll also do is two things. Create some sort of coupon for your listeners so they can, if they do want to come to Vegas, like as a thank you to you for having me on and telling everyone, some sort of discount of like 80 something dollars to come along, hear the talk. And like I said, if you come to the seminar, you're going to pay legitimately way less than everyone online. It's really just a thank you because I just love talking in person. And also because the first, a few hundred people who came, I've used them as guinea pigs in the coaching group. Like all of their questions have just built a seminar more and more. It's helped me refine the calculator into something that's amazing. And so, you know, Vegas is going to be that last, probably the last talk unless I do Dubai as well. But what I will say is, yes, this is all going to become something big. So I'm either going to release a nicely edited version of the seminar, but what I have thought is going to be better. I didn't say this earlier. I don't want people to just use the calculator, run off and do it. I want them to hear the seminar. But I do feel like hearing me talk to a room full of people, because it's very, very interactive, this seminar. We, you know, we go off on tangents. It's super fun. I'm probably going to break it down into 20-minute chunks, record it to camera, and some sort of like mini course where after you've done the first 20 slides and you get what it is you're getting yourself into or get what you're going to be coaching people to do, you get the calculator. And then you can choose to watch the rest. I hope people will after paying for it. But yeah, I've had hundreds and hundreds of DMs. When's this coming out? I need this. I need da da da. So I think I will put it into a bite-sized mini course with a calculator. And so, yeah, if they just follow that martin-mcdonald.com/links, just stick your email in. I'm not someone who's a spammy marketer. I only send stuff when it's helpful. But yeah, and look in the show notes and I'll give Jordan a sort of special lips discount.
Excellent.
Lips 80 or something.
That's awesome. Do you mentioned that enrollment is starting soon. I'm browsing some of the, what you just said, the links, and then I'm seeing the Vegas seminar and then enrollment. When is enrollment for next MNU beginning?
Yeah, so enrollments are open. I guess at the time you release this podcast, they'll be open. They actually close on, so full with honors, sadly, but also nicely for me, but it does. I don't like people not being able to get what they want. And it's just difficult, isn't it? It's like the full with honors program is like 48 hours, all gone. But, you know, last year, like it was 2 weeks. So I always say to people, like, if you want to get in there quick. And so if they want to get on the priority list for next year for full with honors, you know, do that. It's the best way to do it. But yeah, full online, there's still places left. But enrollments will be closing on the 21st of this month, July. So again, like action that quick, get in contact. And, you know, I know previous podcasts you and I have done, you sort of talked about your experience. And I'm really grateful that I'll just say publicly, thanks so much for your support and stuff. Because it's, I just think people respect you, see what you've done. And you're very kind in your words and your, I guess, giving credit where things have helped you and that sort of thing. So, yeah, hopefully people can sort of follow in your footsteps and do great things like you have by doing MNU.
Thank you. I also had I don't know if you know who she is, Rachel Henley on the podcast, who graduated full with honors. We just had a nice chat about it. Yeah, she's a...
Oh, cool.
I don't know if you follow her. She's hysterical. She's a... You guys would hit it off. She's got a real potty mouth. She's hysterical. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So she was full with honors. So I got to meet her at all the residentials. Yeah, she was a real nice, good sarcastic sense of humor. I like her a lot. That's cool. She's just another one that's gone on to kind of do great things. It's always nice when someone, you just see them rising. So because they do just embody everything it's about. And, you know, she's obviously a very intelligent individual as well, like yourself. So it is nice to see people like that doing well. And it's fantastic promotion for what the course is about.
Yep. Agreed. All right. I appreciate you, Martin. A wonderful chat as always. Really great. We got to come back and do a child nutrition podcast. I think that's it's top of mind for me. So we'll schedule something in the future. And in the meantime, I'll plug all that stuff. I'll put some of the studies that we linked. I'll put all the links to the seminar in there. And I appreciate your time as always.
Yeah. We'll have to do something about weaning within the next 3 to whatever months.
Yeah, definitely. Excellent.
Cool. Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.